I think I can read it a little bit rapidly. Matthew 20, beginning with verse 1. For the kingdom of heaven is like a householder who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them into his vineyard, and going out about the third hour, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And to them he said, you go into the vineyard too, and whatever is right I will give you. So they went. Going out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour, he did the same. And about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing, and he said to them, why do you stand here idle all day? They said to him, because no one has hired us. He said to them, you go into the vineyard too. And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his steward, call the laborers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last up to the first. And when those hired about the 11th hour came, each of them received a denarius. Now when the first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received a denarius. And on receiving it, they grumbled at the householder, saying, these last worked only 1 hour, and you've made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat. But he replied to them, friend, I'm doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last as I gave to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me, or do you begrudge my generosity? So the last will be first, and the first last. I'd have a terrible time being a Christian if the faith that I confessed didn't make any sense. As a matter of fact, I think it makes a great deal of sense, and one of the ecstasies of being a Christian is to be able to move through life with the confidence that it's possible to put it all together, at least some of it together, some of the time. It's really great that one doesn't have to unscrew his head in order to be a Christian. But that's just part of it. The other part is that Christianity is also full of surprises. In fact, it's possible even to say it's one big surprise, and this particular text is about the surprise. The ones who work all day get the agreed upon wage. They haven't been cheated. They get what they've been promised. But the others get the same thing, and that's a surprise. It's a shock. It's not right. It doesn't make sense. A man ought to get what he deserves. A member of the Portland, Oregon Rotary Club led his fellow Rotarians in the following prayer on Rotary Golf Day. Thank you, O God, for Jesus Christ, our pro, who shows us how to get the right grip on life, to slow down in our backswing, to correct our crazy hooks and slices, to keep our head down in humility, and to follow through in self-control. May he teach us also to be good sports who will accept the rub of the green, the penalty for being out of bounds, the reality of lost balls, the relevancy of par, the dangers of the 19th hole, and the authority of our rule book, the Bible. And Lord, when that last putt has dropped into the cup of the last tournament, though our trophies be few, our handicap still too low, and the hole-in-one still only a dream, may we be able to turn in a good scorecard to you, our tournament director, in that great clubhouse. Now that's a wee bit gross. I mean, I know that there's no one here who would talk or pray like that. But the trouble is that there is no end to the subtle ways in which to moralize the gospel, to squelch the surprise, to begrudge God his gifts, to refuse the gift, to insist that we get what we deserve rather than what God chooses to give. We really do have a tough time with a God who gives the same to the one who works an hour as to the one who works 12. we really do have a tough time with grace. And so we say over and over again that what really matters, of course, is how a person behaves. What really matters is who he loves and whom he hates. And it seems to me that we're moving into a period in the church, or we've even been in it for a while, when Christians are described even more by what they're against than by what they're for. And it's the old good guys and bad guys thing all over again. It's those who work 12 hours arguing with the boss who pays all the workers the same wages. And so we moralize the gospel, we squelch the surprise, we refuse the gift. We want the command without the commander. We want love without the lover. We want the predicate without the subject. We want the commandments without the prologue. I am the Lord thy God who brought thee out of Egypt. We want morality without faith. The story says that the last will be first and the first will be last. And we hear that and we figure, oh, if that's the case, the thing to be is last so that we'll wind up first. One-downmanship is the same as one-upmanship. Worse-than-thou-ism is the same as holier-than-thou-ism. It's the same record played backwards. It's the same game played with different rules. Paul calls it sinning that grace might abound. And if you know Paul, you know he took a rather dim view of that. The only thing that the church has, finally, or better, the only thing that has the church, is grace, the gospel, the assurance that God gives his good gifts freely. And to lose that is to lose everything. But to receive it is to receive everything. Joy and peace and hope and courage and all of those things, my own life, my parents, my children, my neighbor, and that whole big old world out there to suffer with, to identify with, to pray for, to agonize over, to care for, to love, to enjoy, to embrace, to celebrate. It comes as total surprise, but once it comes, it makes a lot of sense. We're going home tomorrow, and we're going to bring Holden home with us, and that means lots of little things. But it means one big thing, and that's to hang on like crazy to the grace of God. And that's something to be thankful for. I think we ought to stand and sing this last thing again.